everyone. Welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. New Haven's been ticking with discord this week. It revolves around the police department. The man in the studio today knows about the police department, and he does know about police department discord. His name is John Valleca. He's a retired former police chief in New Haven. Welcome to the studio, John. It's great to have you back.
Hey, Paul. It's always nice to be here.
So you've been watching from afar this week as New Haven Police Department's been a mess. We had a rally. Well, we had a start of the week with the acting chief of police, interim, Anthony Campbell, decided to suspend an assistant chief for having berated an officer who was wearing his department knit cap in a way he thought wasn't appropriate and called him an effing mope a couple times. Then over the police radio, called him into a meeting and then refused to let him have his union rep president first. And then both those guys, Campbell and Casanova, are trying to become chiefs, so it was political. And plus, Casanova's Hispanic, and Hispanic groups in town are feeling that they aren't getting enough positions in the Harp administration, and Campbell's African-American. So first you had African-American clergy and cops holding a press conference saying it's outrageous what Casanova did, this disqualified him, put off this, end the search for a new police chief, just make him the chief now. And the mayor said, no, we're going with that process. The next day, Hispanic clergy and activists, as well as non-Hispanics, even some African-American civil rights people, and some people from Fairhaven who remembered Casanova, and he was the district manager there and was quite popular. They came out to a bigger rally at City Hall, and they blasted the other rally, and they said this is a smear campaign. They accused the mayor of orchestrating it to make Casanova look bad. She said, why would I do that? I could just pick my guy now if I wanted. But they said, you know, this is a conflict of interest for Campbell, the acting chief, to discipline someone and investigate someone who wants the same job he wants. And they and there's a real concern about Black Hispanic tensions, both in the police department and in New Haven with all this going on. What did it look like from your vantage point?
Oh, it looked like the same old thing, to be honest with you. From my vantage point, we've been through this kind of stuff before. You know, the chief spot has been relatively unsettled for the past, over 10 years now, right? We've had a revolving door. And, you know, in this season and when we're looking for chiefs, it just brings out the worst in everybody. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, it makes everything devolve. We shouldn't be having this discussion with the success that New Haven Police Department has had within the community and within with our crime statistics alone. We should be celebrating the PD right now instead of dealing with this kind of stuff, to be honest. And that's what I think.
Why does it bring out the worst in people?
Well, I think everybody's vying for a job, and everybody's trying to attach to somebody who may get that top job, and you know everybody's pushing their own personal agendas, and they do that by trying to make other people look bad instead of trying to make themselves look good.
Are you including Chief Campbell in that?
I'm sorry?
Do you include Chief Campbell in that? Do you think he disciplined Casanova because he was pushing a personal agenda?
I do not.
So who's pushing an agenda?
I would say the people supporting him, maybe on the exterior, the people that you may be seeing up front in the media, in the community.
Would you say both sides, the ministers?
I would say both sides, sure. And it's a very dangerous road to go down if you're, you know, either Louis or Anthony here. I don't think they're doing them, either one of these guys, a favor by holding these rallies. And
because why isn't it doing a favor? Does it taint them?
I think it does. I think that, you know, you would have to say there would have to be an agenda for why you feel the need to hold a press conference and push a certain candidate. And you would always wonder if you know, would the chief ever reciprocate that favor in the future? Say, somebody's family member was arrested. And you don't want to even taint the chief's position with that type of thought. Now, not to say that would happen, but it would clearly be on people's minds that, you know.
So it'd be an appearance.
The optics of it would be bad, sure.
Wow, that I hadn't even thought of that point. And does it make it harder for each of them to become the chief now?
I think, like I said, I don't think it's done either Anthony or Louis any favors. All of this that's blown up and the rallies and to perpetuate this and keep this going, I don't think it's good for either one of them, to be honest.
So you think it might open the door to a third person?
It may. It may not. Don't get me wrong.
Now you said, do you think Casanova and Campbell have acted politically here?
Well, you know, I can't make that correlation because I didn't see either one of them at the rally and I didn't see anybody attributing to them directly. Mm-hmm. It looked like just support.
And you said you don't feel that Chief Campbell acted politically. How do you feel the way he handled it?
Because
some people are saying he's in charge.
Right.
And you have an assistant chief in charge of professional standards that tells people to respect people. And if he's acting that way and not honoring union rights, then you have to take action. And it was only 1 day suspension. Other people say, how can you investigate a person who's your own rival for a chief's job? Isn't that a conflict of interest? He should have stepped aside. What's your view on that? Because you were in that position. You were right. Disciplined people. You were a chief.
Right. I actually had a couple very, very similar incidents, which I won't go into. But what I will say is...
No, I don't even give us a hint there.
What's that?
No, give us a hint there.
No, I don't want to give you a hint there. But what I'll say is from what I see, and like I say, I only see what I see in the media as far as details. Now, the investigation that Anthony Campbell read may have many more details than what we see on the media, right? But it's a deportment issue. It happens to be the assistant chief and an interaction with an officer. But these are things we deal with every day, mm-hmm. every day. This is probably the most common complaint we deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I know Lou. Lou is very, very much in tune with wearing the uniform. It's very big for him. It's a very high priority with how you look in uniform. Mm-hmm. And I could surely see him addressing that issue. From what I understand, one of the facts that's not in dispute is that there was some abusive or profane language used yeah. on the officer. Now, the officer makes a complaint. Anthony Campbell has to do something with it. He just can't ignore it, right? Mm-hmm. So his options are either take it at the face value, which you can with this. This is not a murder investigation here. This is pretty straightforward, and handle it yourself. Or, I mean, you could call an outside agency in and ask their internal affairs division to do it to a short internal affairs investigation because you want it to be objective and with the backdrop of the chief thing that's going on,
mm-hmm.
that might have been a safe way to go too.
But what would you have done?
I would have called, personally, I would have probably called the Connecticut State Police internal
something
affairs.
Something this small?
Just, yeah, but right. But I would explain that to them. I would explain the backdrop to them and say, listen, I know this is a minor incident, but here's the context of this. And mm-hmm. I think that it would have been better if maybe you have one or two people do that. And they could have
so do you fault Campbell?
I do not, because he's the chief, and that's his decision. Mm-hmm. The way you put the question to me was what would I do?
Yeah.
And that's what I would do if I was the chief. But I don't see anything wrong with Anthony Campbell deciding.
Is that because it's not a big deal?
I would say, yeah, I don't think it is a big deal. I think it's been blown out of proportion and highly exaggerated.
Mm-hmm. One of the demonstrators yesterday, Barbara Fair, supporting Casanova.
Right.
She said, here are all these people who complain that cops rough them up and they never get disciplined, but a cop says mope and he loses a day of work. She felt that showed a skewed priority.
Right. And if you took a comment like that on the face, it surely would. I think you would have to look at each case individually and put them against one another to be able to say whether her comment rings true, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're not concerned about that. But overall, so to summarize, John Valeca, mm-hmm. you're saying that you feel like you're not faulting Casanova or Campbell. You're saying Casanova maybe spoke in a way he shouldn't have. He's sincerely right. concerned about uniform. There wasn't this big deal that needed a huge investigation. If you were the chief, you might have thought, you know, second guessing it, that you would have called in someone outside, even though it's minor because of the optics, but that you're not really faulting Campbell. Wasn't a big deal. But you feel that the people rallying on either side have larger agendas that are making things worse in the department, the city, and it makes it harder for Campbell and Casanova to now be untainted candidates for chief.
Yes, I agree with the entire thing you just said.
Well, no, I'm saying that's what I'm hearing from
that's,
you.
That's right. That's a good summary. That's what I believe, yeah.
Well, the other part of the summary is that you're listening to Dateline New Haven, a WNHH radio broadcast at 103.5 FM and live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. Our guest today is John Valeca, the former chief retiree now of the New Haven Police Department, who is watching with some concern the mess this week with all this controversy in town. So how did we get here? I mean, is it new? I remember back in the 70s, they used to have what they called the Gaelic Garlic Wars in the New Haven Police Department, where the Italian cops and the Irish cops used to just kill each other and set each other up to get in trouble and fight over who got what promotions. Do we still see that with ethnic groups in the department?
Oh, God. To be honest with you, I think that there's a divide within the department. There surely is. And incidents like this don't help us. I don't know if I would go as far as to say there are wars. I think that, you know, within the walls of the police department, there are subgroups, obviously, within the rank and file.
And is it racial? Because I know that there are two black police officer associations that have sued the city of Pili, say they get screwed out of promotions. I know that there are white cops who are in conflict with them about promotions, about discipline. Hispanic officers seem to be different. They seem to take, they kind of step back a little bit. I don't see them as, uniformly saying one side or the other or throwing themselves into controversy certain way. But I could be wrong because I did see some current and retired Hispanic officers here yesterday who were telling me this has been going on forever and it's no longer Gaelic garlic. They said it's white, black, Hispanic, and they do fight and they do jockey in the department, and that right. an instance like this is bringing it to the fore, but it is there.
Right. It surely is there. There's no doubt that, you know, well, racism exists in all facets of our society, right? And the police department is no different.
And is it just racism or is it also just racial groups in contest?
That's a better way to put it. Racial groups, people will...
I'm not denying racism exists. I'm just thinking if black and Latino groups think the other one's getting a better shake and they're jockeying for power, is that racism?
I think that
racial politics?
I think our city is divided in thirds, right? This is a city that's divided on almost exactly
That's pretty
exactly
roughly,
third,
almost exactly,
right?
Yeah, if you count undocumented people.
And I think that what you have in the police department is the dynamic that's throughout the city. You know, you have three separate dynamics, demographics rather, competing for certain positions. And, you know, everybody wants a slice of the pie, so to speak. But yeah, I don't think it's on the base level with the rank and file. I think it gets venomous when it gets to the top. When you start,
I was thinking about that
position.
Because when I think about day to day on the force, you see the officers of different races patrolling together as being real buddies. It seems like it's sincere. This officer made the complaint, who did not feel it was primarily racial, although he felt he was taught at the police academy not to say the word mope because it's like the N word, even though
right.
most people say it is not. There are black officers feel it is.
Right.
Some
well,
of the
that's
black
a whole.
Officers, that's
know,
another discussion.
Sure, yeah. Because that it's a matter of how that the person that's using that word. In my personal opinion, if I heard somebody say the word mope, depending on that person, I would think there's a racial connotation
you would.
To it. I would absolutely,
yeah.
But I certainly don't believe that Louis Casanova using that word mope meant anything racial by
right.
it at all. Absolutely
right.
not.
And the officer was black. He said it too. And that officer has been partners for a long time with a Latino beat officer, and they do great work together. They've had some high-profile arrests. They seem to get along. I've seen
right.
them together. I've hung out with them together a little bit. They're really getting along. And now, Harry Jarosz, I see you look, you're in the studio here from NHS. You seem to be wanting to jump in about the contest among ethnic groups. Do you think brown versus black is a real dynamic here in the city and in the department?
I think it's a high priority when it comes to the political realm. I think, you know, everybody gets along well with each other except when you're jockeying for positions.
Right.
Mm. And then does it become tribal?
It only becomes tribal when you see, when you kind of get the feeling that somebody's being pushed along and not earning it.
And I noticed some of the right. participants in this group on both protests noticed who was involved in the other one. They get suspicion. They feel they have to leap forward. I kind of feel like Casanova and especially Campbell are being dragged into this somewhat as symbols of something, although maybe they secretly appreciate the support. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you can't tell. You would have to ask those guys in specific.
Yeah.
But I sincerely think when you talk about, you know, do you see race, you don't see it with the patrol officers much, because the reality of the situation is if we're working at night and I need your help, I don't care what color you are.
And you're also a person.
Right.
I mean, most people live in a community here where you do meet other people. And you
right.
know, yeah.
Or if you need help, you know, if you're black, white, female, it makes no difference. You're good. You know, you're a police officer. I think the biggest divide within the walls of the police department are the competent officers and the non-competent officers, because the competent officers seem to always group together.
And is that by race?
It's mixed.
Because I sometimes see groups of white officers who feel like they're more competent. I've seen some of that.
Where
the black officers say that they kind of get the favors, and it's not true. Yeah.
Oh,
but you saw it more from the inside. You're saying in general it's not like that.
I think that we do pretty good in this police department about diversifying and putting, you know, who in our top jobs and even in the rank and file jobs, we're pretty diverse. Now, look, if you ask me my personal opinion with regard to whether the chief should be black or white or Hispanic, I did that job. I could tell you at that level, it makes no difference what color you are. No matter what anybody wants to tell you, they could rally and say, hey, we want a black chief because he understands the black community. Well, guess what? Your chief is not in the community every day. Your rank and file officer is in the community. That's in the field. So should we diversify? Yeah, but we should diversify at the lowest level because those are the cops that are going to be in these neighborhoods, mm-hmm. right? Listen, you go into work as the chief, sometimes you don't even leave the office.
Mm-hmm.
So what difference does it make? As long as you're competent and you could administrate the department, you could drive the officers with
And what did you find when you were chief? Did you have to deal with conflicts involving race?
There's always conflicts involved.
So think name one to me without naming names.
Well, basically what we're talking about here is you know, listen, I assigned, when I was in narcotics, we assigned probably, had to be over a dozen task force positions, right?
And those are plums, right? Task force means you work with the federal government,
right,
the state, you're doing
position.
This kind of exciting jobs, and you're doing all this hush-hush work. They involve a lot of skill,
right?
Serious charges.
But they're good jobs, right? So they're good assignments. You get a car with them, you get overtime. So a lot of people put in for these jobs. And, you know, I had full authority over who I was going to put in there. So, you know, if I put an officer who was black in there, everybody would say he got it because he was black. If I put a Hispanic officer, they would say the same. If I put a white officer, they would say the same. So the reality is, you know what is the best and the easiest thing to do? Put the qualified guys in there.
So what happened?
Like them?
Were they of different races when you did that?
And you want to know something? That's exactly right. When you put it all out there and you just take the most qualified people, you're diverse by default.
And so what about now? You before on the air, you were mentioning this is a little deja vu for you because back in the early 2000s, there was a black Assistant Chief Brian Norwood and Assistant Chief Cisco Ortiz were up for chief.
Right.
And we saw the same kind of jockeying. I remember hearing from Latino politicians, black politicians, they were behind each of those two chiefs, right? You said there was going to be a rally for
Absolutely,
Ortiz.
Yeah.
And what happened then? How'd that play out?
Well, at that time, that's what was going on. And I know that at one point there was... Cisco Ortiz had brought up the point about rallies, and we were informed that there may be, you know, there were rallies for Chief Ortiz becoming the chief. And I believe at the time, Mayor DeStefano said, you know, there won't be any rallies because it you can't do that. The reality of the situation is if you're my chief of police, I have to be able to disagree with you, and we are going to have problems because our relationship is close. And I can't think in the back of my head that every time I have a disagreement with my chief of police, he's going to hold a rally.
So Ortiz had the ability to ask those people not to rally. Do you think Casanova sent his nephew to this rally. He was aware of the rally.
So I can't, just back up, I don't know.
As Campbell probably was too.
I don't know if Cisco called the rally off, or I know he did in front of me to other people, threatened to have a rally, right? Mm-hmm. Which never occurred. So I don't know whether he was going to form it. And
how do you know
off,
that he was told not to do it?
I had gotten that from, at that time, Brian Norwood. Because Brian was my boss at that time.
That was pretty deep. So then Norwood left the department when he didn't get to be chief. Do you think we'll see that with Campbell and Casanova?
He went
to Bridgeport. He became
chief. That's what everybody thinks, though, but from being friendly with Brian at the time, was that he didn't leave because he didn't get the job. He was okay. He got the assistant chief's job. He still got a promotion. He left because the infighting became too much. Mm. And the chief and the assistant chief just did not get along. And we started to see a divide within the police department. We started to see a racial divide. Who was on North? I could tell you directly, I went in to see Ortiz at one time. This is my own experience.
Yeah.
Now, I worked for Brian Ward. He's a good friend of mine at the time. I worked in the bureau. He ran the bureau.
Detective Bureau.
Right. When I went to see Chief Ortiz about an issue, he told me to go see Brian Norwood because he was my chief. That's the kind of divide we had.
Wow. So Ortiz, what issue were you going to Ortiz for?
It was it was an investigation of some type, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but I had asked to sit with him and see him, and he wasn't in the office. So I left a message. His secretary called me back and said that Chief Ortiz said to go see Chief Norwood because he's your chief.
Wow. So what'd you do with that? How'd that affect you as a detective?
I went to go see Chief Norwood.
But do you think that hurt the department?
It destroys the department.
Is this going to happen again?
I hope not.
And are you worried this is going to happen out of this?
I do worry about it because, listen, this is a great department. And until you leave here, you don't get to see how great it is until you're looking back at it, right? And I know that we got a lot of young police officers here that are very impressionable. And you really don't want them to see this as their first experience, you know, on the job. We've seen this major divide over who the chief is going to be.
Yeah.
You know, I say, you know, I agree with the mayor. Have the process. Let everybody put their best foot forward and then make a decision.
Some people think if she had just picked Campbell right away, whom she might have been leaning toward, that could have avoided a lot of this.
It could have, but I'm sure, you know, you do have an assistant chief in Louis Casanova who's been there he's been in that spot for, 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
I think you should give him a chance to at least put himself out there and let him show everybody what he, you know, his record, what he's done. And then look, let's not be silly here. She's going to make the decision who she wants anyways, because it's not an election.
Right.
It's simply an appointment. And that's, she's got to make somebody she's comfortable with, somebody who she trusts.
Well, I trust that you know that you listen to Dateline New Haven on WNHH Radio, broadcast at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. Our guest today is John Vilecka, retired former police chief of the New Haven Police Department. There was another controversy recently, which was about prostitution.
Right.
For once in a while, we do these stings of prostitutes on the street, lock them up, and we don't do that with Johns. And there was a protest about it where people said, why don't we do what cities like Seattle do, which call in the prostitutes first, offer them some kind of treatment, a lot of them on drugs, other kind of help, and then tell them we'll arrest you if you keep out there, but also focus on Johns and bust prostitutes because it's not addressing the root of the problem. They just come right back out. The other argument I heard from the cops, they hated this protest. They were very angry at us for even writing about this. They said, look, the neighborhood is sick of prostitution. We want to give them some relief. A lot of these people are on drugs, and they're not going to get off drugs, even if we say, here's the help. And a prostitute I interviewed said she didn't know if she would go for the help, although some wouldn't. And that you have, that's community policing responding to what the neighborhood wants. Other people say community policing solving the root of problems. People say, yeah, I'm sick of drugs. If you go round up a bunch of drug dealers to make them happy for a week, those are drug users. They're going to be out a week later, those low-level people. You haven't solved the problem. You're just giving people records, and you haven't gotten deeper into it to get at the root. How did you look at this from afar?
Well, we would do both. When we were in the T&E, the Tactical Narcotics Unit, we would do handle prostitution. We would do both. We would do Johns and prostitutes. Is that better?
Could you hear me before?
So we would do both, Johns and prostitutes. With regard,
so you don't agree with the argument that rounding up the prostitutes just gives them more of a record, doesn't get them help, they'll be back out?
No, to a degree I do. And that's true. But there's also a quality of life issue, right? Which is one of the main tenets of community policing.
Right.
Which when, you know, a whole neighborhood calls in and tells you about prostitutes, you
right.
have
I lived
to
in Fairhaven. I remember when my little kid and the prostitutes walking up and down and bullying on the lawn and drugs. But the question is, are you giving them relief if you've just made the problem worse? That's the argument on the other side. Locking them up makes the worse because now they have a record. Their lives are tougher, but they're no less desperate. They haven't addressed their problem and they're right back out on the street.
Well, okay, so I can't agree with you by saying that enforcing a quality of life issue, no matter how low that is, we're necessarily making somebody's life worse. I get it, what you're saying. With
some
the,
people argue it makes it better because they need to be put in the system to convince them to go get help.
You know,
there are two sides of this argument.
But I think the biggest thing we have to remember, too, is we can't be everything for everyone. In the police department, you know, we can't solve all of society's
woes. Right, you can't be the
woes.
Social worker. You can't be a drug counselor. But the programs, and we're looking at this now in New Haven, like the one in Seattle, they're doing it in Baltimore, where you team up with people who do that, the way you work with the Child Study Center to give kids exposed to violence. I was giving the argument in your favor before by saying some people say bringing them in, that's people with health problems into the criminal justice system makes the problem worse by giving them a record, no help. But other people say sometimes it's the shock they need to go get the help they weren't getting otherwise.
I will tell you that, and I will draw the parallel to low-level drug arrests as well. I don't think that they make much sense. I don't think the prostitution, low-level prostitution arrests make much sense, but they're a necessary evil. Okay, there's something that needs to be done.
Why do the drug arrests need to be done?
The drug arrests are very similar to the prostitution arrests where they affect the quality of life in the neighborhood because a low-level drug dealer if they establish themselves in a certain area and they begin to sell drugs in that area, then the quality of life in that area begins to go down. You start to have robberies.
That person be replaced the next day?
Well, why cut my toenails? They're going to grow back, right?
Right.
Maybe. But it doesn't mean that we should ignore it, right?
Any thoughts on this, Harry? Because you grew up in a neighborhood full of drug dealers.
Personally, for me, you don't ignore the law. The law is there for a reason.
But do you arrest everybody who does every infraction of every law all the time?
That's not really the point. If I'm leaving my house, I don't need to see a drug dealer in front of my house. You know, I don't need to see a prostitute in front of my house. It affects my quality of life. It affects my children's quality of life. So those laws are there for a reason. I know a lot of people want to ignore certain laws, but they're there for a reason.
All right. Another thing I want to ask you, because we're running a little late on time, is there have been a lot of homeless people, about 20 of them, camping out near in the woods near in East Rock near I-91 by Willow Street.
Right.
And the city found out about it. They got complaints from the neighborhood. And there was two safety issues, one of which was you could have a fire there. They were using candles in their tents and things like that to stay warm. But they're also scared to death that people are going to freeze to death.
Yeah.
And we have a cold weather emergency starting Thursday night. So they gave them a week and said, we're not going to kick you out today, but we're going to work with you to find other housing and get you help for drug problems or counseling or long-term supportive housing, which we do have in New Haven, including for people with addiction at places like Liberty Community Services. We're going to help you with employment. And most of the people took the help, but there are about 4 to 6 holdouts, 2 married couples who don't want to go into the shelters. They think they're dangerous and yucky. And they wanted to stay out there and camp. So the city's right now, there's some rallying Thursday about tearing down that camp. Any thoughts on what you would do?
Well, there are liability there if they're on, you know, city property, and we don't take any type of action to safeguard them. They might not be thinking in the right mind. We don't know if they have mental health issues.
They clearly do. So what do you do with someone who doesn't want to? We have a huge safety net here compared to any other city around here. That's
absolutely
why people come here. We have a lot of shelters. We have a lot of supportive housing, which I think is the key. I mean, you have the services linked up with where they live.
Right.
But what about people? We had a big debate on this in their comment section. What about people who just want to camp outside? They're homeless. Why shouldn't they be allowed to?
Well, you know, we're getting into a day. You say, you know, if it's 70 degrees and sunny out, and the chief complaint is that they're an eyesore, is that where we're going? Obviously, there's a safety issue here because of
how about
the cold
when it's
weather.
Cold? Yeah. What if they want to be unsafe? What if they want to risk dying? Should we let people risk dying if they want to? We've done everything to help them?
I would say, as the chief of police, I would send my officers there to try and do everything we can do within our power and reason with them to get them to willfully come with us. And I got to be honest, that's a tough call. That's a difficult decision. I could see the
point. I think it's not on this land because there is a neighborhood right there and you could have a fire. I mean, there is a hazard on public land and then you're liable, I think, or you fear that. But
it's what you mean, though.
I mean, so
point,
in practice, I don't see any alternative in this case to doing everything you can to get them housing. And if they won't leave, you got to make them leave off your property.
Yeah.
But there is a tough question about people who, if they have mental illness or any other reason, they just want to be out there in the woods.
Right. But, you know, I could get to the point where I would say, you know, as professionals, when do we get to a point where we should know better? Like, would it be negligent for me to leave those people out there? You know, and if that's the case, you know, we'd have to do everything we can do now to get them out of there and get them into a warm facility.
30 seconds, body cams. They're coming to New Haven. Is this a good thing, bad thing? Any problems you've seen rolling them out?
I think body cams are a great thing.
Where officers wear the camera and they record what the officer sees.
Right.
Where does that leave citizen video, where you get it from the other perspective of what the officer's doing?
As far as?
Rights of citizen video people. Oh, we've had a lot of problems with that.
Well, we all know. I mean, it's been well established that people have the right to film the police while they're in their duties, as long as they're a safe distance away. I don't see any problem. Listen, the cops here in New Haven do a great job. I don't think that they should have any problems with being on video. In fact, I think they'll work out well for them.
Video almost always exonerates the officer. Once in a while, it doesn't.
Right, because the reality of the situation
is grabbing the camera that's the problem.
Right, yes. Yes, as you've made abundantly clear, yes.
Well, what about the cops wearing the cameras? How would you feel about it? Like, you left right before this got to the floor. What kind of difference is it going to make and why?
Well, I thought it was, I was the first department in New Hampshire to put them on the police officers in New Hampshire.
Did?
Right,
okay.
And I wrote the policy.
And how did it work out?
Worked out well, because we found out that, like I was going to say, 99% of the time, the officer's doing the exactly
My favorite
right
one was
thing.
A Brantford. A guy gave a complaint that this officer stopped for no reason. He was being polite. They brought him in and showed him swearing at the officer and threatening him. And also, it was great. The complaint dropped. But what did you have to put in the policy to make sure you anticipated problems?
Storage is the biggest issue. Storage, how we retain it, when we're going to get rid of it.
Big capacity problem. What about FOI? Were a lot of people asking for copies of videos?
Yes, they were.
So how did you deal with that?
Well, you know, you have to whittle that down to what we could send out. We have to vet the videos. And we would send them out, you know?
That could be a lot of staff time.
You surely will need more staff for just to handle the body camera videos, there's no doubt.
Okay, well, it's a new era in policing, and I'm so glad we had John Vilecka in the office, in the studio today to help us navigate it. Hopefully you'll come back again. One of our favorite guests here at WNHH Radio, Harry Joros, as usual in the studio. Thanks for participating. Thanks for joining us on Dateline New Haven. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It'd Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. So book your flight with us all day and all night here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.